Hey there, it's Melissa Brunetti, and welcome to the Mind Your Own Karma podcast.
Hi there, Karma Crew. Thanks for joining me for this episode of Mind Your Own Karma, The Adoption Chronicles. Today, I have Julie McGue on the show. Let me tell you a little bit more about Julie. She is an American writer, a domestic adoptee, and an identical twin. In her books, essays, and blogs, she explores the topics of finding out who you are, where you belong, and making sense of it. Her award-winning memoir, Twice a Daughter, A Search for Identity, Family, and Belonging, was released in May of 2021. Her work has appeared in multiple journals, anthologies, and online sites, such as the Story Circle Network Journal, Brevity Nonfiction Blog, and Severance Magazine. Her latest book, a collection of essays titled Belonging Matters, Conversations on Adoption, Family, and Kinship, released in November of 2023. Her third book, another memoir, and a prequel to Twice a Daughter, releases in February of 2025. Julie splits her time between Northwest Indiana and Sarasota, Florida. Here is my interview with Julie McGue. We are welcoming Julie to the podcast today. Hi, Julie.
Hi, Elsa.
How are you doing today?
I'm good. It's nice to do this close to the weekend. I feel like the weekend's starting early.
Good. So let's just jump right in to your story and let's tell the listeners, what are the circumstances that you knew of your adoption? What did you know growing up?
I actually knew very little because it was a closed adoption, but I'm an identical twin and we were adopted together. So that really was a tremendous blessing going through life, having this full sibling growing up with her. And we never had to worry about who we looked like. We looked like each other. But we always had a natural curiosity about who our birth parents were and why we were placed for adoption.
So what was that like, having that mirroring with your sister? Because you're identical twins.
Correct.
Growing up, how did that affect, did it help you fit into your adoptive family or did that affect it at all?
Well, we were the oldest. So 2 years after our parents adopted us, they adopted a little boy and then they had three more kids, biological kids. So we were at the top half of the big Irish Catholic family. And I think that made a big difference as far as how everybody folded in together. I never had the sense that they really treated the biological kids any different. In fact, maybe there was a little more preferential treatment to us older ones because we were the first.
Mm. Wow. So how was it? You didn't feel, when they finally had biological kids, you didn't feel different than from the rest of them?
No, I think like most oldest children in a family, you are a little resentful for having to watch your younger brothers and sisters and all the chores and things that go along with that. But now I really feel like maybe because being a twin, there was this very unique status, if you will, in being a twin and being the oldest.
Did you always know you were adopted? Do you ever remember being told?
I don't remember being told. It seems like we just always knew. And often enough during, family times, special times like birthdays and holidays, my parents would get a little emotional and talk about the day that they got the call from Catholic Charities that twin girls were waiting for them. So, I feel like we always knew.
So let's fast forward a little bit. Many times adoptees feel like they have to have a reason to search. You know, you have to have that that reason to do that, that excuse to find your biology. What led you to research your adoption history?
Well, two times I actually tried to research it. I had three children by the time I was 30. And at that time, the laws in Illinois were still the same. Closed adoption meant you could know nothing. But I tried. I sent a letter to Catholic Charities and asked if I could have some information, and got a letter back that said, no, nothing can be shared with you at this time, not even non-identifying information.
Wow.
And then 20 years later, about, I was sent for a breast biopsy, and my husband said, you gotta get at this. And I got lucky that time, because in 2011, the state laws in Illinois were changing. There's a state senator in Illinois who was an adoptee, very talented politician, and she was able to get, was spearhead getting the laws changed for open records. So the records that I did have, find, were not that helpful, though, because in my era, the birth mothers were encouraged to use an alias. Didn't know that was the case until, you know, I started searching and came up on a lot of roadblocks. Also, at that time, it was perfectly legal that a birth father didn't have to sign off on his parental rights. So his name was also omitted from my birth certificate. So what we found out, my sister and I, because we were doing this journey together, was that we needed more help. We needed to open our sealed records that Catholic Charities had. Again, we got lucky because a new program was being instituted in Illinois where confidential intermediaries were under the court system, and we petitioned to have an intermediary assigned to us, and she opened all the records and accessed our files, and she found our birth mom's real name.
That just blows my mind. Every time I hear that someone put a different name on the birth certificate, I'm like, this is a legal document.
Yeah.
And it just blows my mind that they can just put Sally Jones on there and no father.
Well, you know, and this is part of the travesty of adoption in that era, is the adoptee had no rights, no say-so, nothing. And the birth parents and the adoptive parents were all fighting for the secrecy and the control over this child. Birth parents didn't want the shame of being considered, in my birth mother's case, an unwed mother, or the secret getting out, because she never told anybody. And adoptive parents didn't want any co-parenting issues. They wanted the baby to be theirs and to do what they want. So it's still a shame that people my age, because I'm over 60, that have to fight to get any kind of information about their background, since open adoption is much more transparent for the most part. And that's been in institutions since, what, 1980s.
Yeah.
So it's just a big fat dinosaur that we're struggling to wrestle down.
Right. And growing up, did you and your sister talk about like your biological family at all? Or do you remember like how old you were when you started wondering about your biology?
I'm certain, because I kept a lot of journals from my growing up years, that it was towards being a teenager, and we started making up our own little fantasy about who they were and what happened. We were sure they were little high school sweethearts that got carried away, and their parents said, no, go to college. You know, so we had this sweet little fantasy in our mind, and I could not have been more surprised when I found out what the real facts were. My birth mom was 26. She had a relationship with a coworker, a teacher, fellow teacher, and they were very knowing, consenting adults that her pregnancy did not fit into their lives, and she contacted Catholic Charities to help her sort through it.
Yeah. And how did your adoptive parents feel about you searching, you know, even though the reason was because you were having this breast biopsy and, you know, all those things, how did they react to you doing that?
You know, it's such an interesting thing. I think when parents believe that, you know, something's never going to come to pass, they're much more generous with the statements surrounding it. So both my parents said that they would help my sister and I should we ever really want to look into our adoption story. And we didn't have any reason not to believe them, but we were uncomfortable about doing any of that as teenagers. And then when I had to call them up and ask them for my adoption papers, which should have been the first clue, Melissa, that I never received my adoption papers, that they still had them in their safe deposit box, that even though I had this health issue, my mom was really, really unhappy with me. She didn't draw a line in the sand about it, but I knew that she was really upset that I was going down this path to find the other mother.
Yeah. How did that affect your relationship with her?
Oh, a definite strain for quite some time. I just stopped telling her anything of value, withdrew from her. And there was a lot going on. There was a lot of heartache at that time because we had reached out to our birth mom through the intermediary and she had rejected us at the first pass. Mm. So I had the health issue, the issue with my adoptive mom, and then also the secondary rejection with my birth mom. So that was when I got involved with Catholic Charities and their post-adoption support group. And that group was made up of birth mothers, adoptive moms, and adoptees like me that were trying to find their lost family. And I really learned a lot. And that support from other adoptees who are going through the same thing with their adoptive parents or struggles with health and accessing information. It was very formative. And I'm still, I mean, it's almost 14 years later, I'm still involved in that group.
Wow. So you mentioned that you had a first reject or a second rejection from your birth mother. And I was just going to ask you, what was the most heartbreaking moment of your adoption search? Was it that your birth mother rejected you, or was there something
It was,
else?
You know, it happened like 3 days before my birthday. Mm. So the fact that I was rejected from her on the very day that should have brought us together was deeply hurtful. And because of my health issues, I argued with the intermediary to try to get the judge to get involved. And we had to provide all sorts of documents from my doctors. And he ultimately said we could go back to her and ask for health history, which really turned the case around because she did comply and send the health history back. She waited many months. But then she finally called the intermediary, and the intermediary was skillful enough to get her to agree to start exchanging letters and pictures. And eventually that led to a phone call and meeting her. So it took about 9 months from rejection to actually meeting her in person.
Yeah. And how did the experience of meeting your birth mother, how did that change you?
You know, I think you don't realize, maybe because you're suppressing your wants and needs as an adoptee, you don't realize until you've attained that knowledge or that meeting how much it really did mean to you to get that to that step. I just felt completely content and fulfilled. I knew who she was. She had given me all my family history, pictures, health history. It was amazing. And she also gave me a name for my birth father, which was sort of the right name, not completely.
Right.
Birth mothers are not always honest.
No, they're not. Did you have siblings from your birth mother?
She did not have any other children besides my sister and I, which I think... In finding that out, I wondered, well, why was she so reluctant to get to know us? You would think, you know, we all have these fantasies that we're going to be the lost girl found and we're going to be welcomed with open arms. And that is a fantasy. And that was one of the things that the adoption support group taught me was, no, you're walking into a movie that is half over. There is so much you don't know.
Exactly.
And I think that guidance and that support I realized I had more empathy for her, honestly, after meeting her, but also having the support group in treating her with kid gloves, because she had her own set of issues. She had to tell her husband. She had never told him. She'd been married to him for over 30 years. So a lot of baggage for her too. And still, I mean, it's not something that once you've built that shell around yourself of secrecy and shame, and you're blaming yourself for what happened and feeling bad also about relinquishing a child, it's not something she has easily shed or let go of. There, we have had continued challenges, but we're still in touch.
Yeah. I think a lot of adoptees don't think about, they think about the day they were relinquished, but there's a story before the day you were relinquished. That's, you know, your birth mother's story and what that story is and how that shapes her and her decisions. And then actually having to give up a child has to be so traumatic for most. And how you deal with that and how that shapes you going forward too, you know, is
yeah.
Huge.
And I think it's some of that transparency that's available in open adoption can help with some of that. Just knowing what the circumstances were, I think would have been very helpful, because it takes you a while to tear down that myth or that fantasy that you've built in your mind and accept the real facts. There were things that came out that she told me. I have American Indian on both sides of my genealogy, which is not anything I would have suspected. I look very Irish and blended in very well with my adopted family, but that is a piece of my identity that I would have liked to have learned more about from the people that could have taught me about it.
Yeah. And then you mentioned in the book too, that not having your father's name on your birth certificate affected you not being able to connect
you
with
know,
parts of that.
Exactly. Because his name is not on my birth certificate, I cannot claim to be a member of the Chippewa tribe. And I have enough DNA in my blood to be, my kids probably all could have gotten into great schools because they were, you know, a minority.
Yeah. And it's funny how they can redact a birth certificate when you're adopted, but they can't go back and redact and add your father to that document now so that you can have those benefits. You can't do that.
No. And the Native American tribes will have to eventually accept DNA analysis in order for those wrongs to be righted. But so far, not the case.
So how did that affect your identity when you found out that you had all these?
I was like, what? Show me pictures. So when I found my birth father, I actually met my brother, my half brother and half sister. I never did get to meet my birth father. My brother did DNA analysis with me, and he was the one that really, because that side of the family has more Chippewa than my mother's side, and he was the one that really filled us in about where they came from and the lineage. They were very big settlers in northern Minnesota and fur traders and settlers. And so very impressive, but not anything I have taken ownership of, nor have my kids. So, you know, it's.
So you mentioned you didn't meet your birth father, but what did he teach you, even though you didn't meet him?
You know, I think that was what he taught me was also a benefit of being an older adoptee that has searched for their origins, because I had a respect for him that he went as far as he wanted to go. And I had to allow that to be the case and respect him for that. He didn't give me a personal relationship. He did tell my brother and my sister about my twin and I, and they were very receptive, and my relationship to them is almost as tight as the brothers and sisters I grew up with.
Wow.
Astoundingly so. Yeah, wow. We share the same sense of humor, love of writing, a good practical joke, you know, just really interesting, quirky little things that tell you you really related to these people.
Did they know about you growing up?
Nope, nothing, nothing. But my birth father had divorced their mom and remarried someone else. So their relationship with him was not as tight, I would say. And so, you know, it wasn't hard for them to imagine that he had other relationships before their mother. And at the end of my memoir, Twice a Daughter, my first book, I go into a lot of detail about how my brother and I figured out our connection. It's an astounding synchronicity. I actually knew his wife.
Oh my gosh. And
probably passed him
oh,
on the
wow.
beach on a regular basis and just had no idea that we were related. I think a lot of adoptees have that story where they find out that their birth mom was in the next town over or a few blocks away. And yeah, it's just astounding.
Yeah, that happened to me too, because my adoptive parents, my biological parents, we all kind of were very close in proximity. They told my bio dad that I had got sent to Texas, and I was probably less than 20 minutes away from him, really. So yeah, we all have those stories where those little white lies are told. And speaking of those little white lies, your birth mother with you're just kind of alluding to your dad and the name that she gave. Talk about that little bit. And how did that affect your relationship? And how are you navigating that relationship now?
Well, she gave me mostly the right name. She didn't spell the last name correctly, which meant that the intermediary that I had used to find her spent well over a year trying to find him. So we wasted a lot of time, some money, because at that time the searching in Illinois was a little pricey. It was crazy. I had hired a genealogist that happened to be in the same town where my birth parents met. She also was an adoptee.
Oh, wow.
So she got it. She went to the city records with a mission because she knew how much it meant, what the stakes were. And she dug and dug and dug, and she came back to me and she said, I know who your birth dad is, or I think I do. And it's not the name your mom gave you. It's this guy. And she had done enough research on him that she said, you know, he's a professor, he's remarried, you have two siblings. And the scary part about it was his sister, my aunt, had died of breast cancer before she was 40. And here I was, you know, on this same kind of path. Is this my story or not my story? And so I wrote him a letter and asked him to confirm. And he did. He wouldn't, but he did send me my health history. And what it did, I didn't tell my birth mom that I found this person until months later, because I wasn't quite sure if she had lied to me or if it was a mistake. The social worker had suggested that, you know, sometimes birth moms are confused. They may not exactly know all the details, but it was not the case. She was furious with me that I had found him and that I'd met, you know, my family from that side of the of my pedigree. So we didn't talk for a while over that one, because she was mad at me and she was in the wrong and she wouldn't admit it.
Yeah.
The interesting thing about how that all happened with my birth father and finding my brother, who was literally married to the girl next door, my mom and dad knew that family. And because she knew my brother and his wife, all of a sudden, that whole scenario was healed. She was welcoming and let's all get together. Like that whole rift went away because she knew who they were and she liked all of them. Oh, and wow. It's not been a problem since. My birth mom still, she's still alive. She lost her husband pretty recently. Mm-hmm. It's probably been 4 years since I've seen her because of COVID, and they continue to have outbreaks in the nursing home that she's at. So trying to visit her is a tricky thing. She's a stinker in the sense that when my sister and I did visit her, she wouldn't let us sign in the guest book. She controlled that. And so I wondered, you know, what did she write in there? I'm sure she didn't write daughters, probably just relatives visiting from Chicago. Because even in the hallway, when we'd walk to her room, she really wouldn't introduce us to anybody. And in her room, there weren't any pictures of us around. Even though we sent her tons and tons of ourselves and our kids and grandkids. So,
why do you think she was still because
the
that?
people that she lives with in that assisted living center are her peer group, a bubble in which she would still be judged as an unwed mother. I don't believe it has anything to do with me. I know she cares about me. We talk on the phone. I think that fear of being judged by society is just so baked into her core that she's never going to get over it.
Yeah. Yeah. So a little bit ago, you mentioned the support group that you had joined. Why did you feel the need at that time to join that group? And what did you learn? What clarity did you gain in your own story from listening to other people and other triad members talk about their stories?
My husband was part of the encouragement to join that support group. He didn't know how to support me, not adopted himself. Nobody we knew other than my younger brother was adopted. And I didn't have anybody that had gone through the experience that I had just gone through. So it was a natural inclination to ask for help. And I think what I learned from talking to other adoptees and particularly birth moms allowed me to forgive her enough to heal when she changed her mind that we could even start any kind of relationship. I do have great empathy for her.
I'm sure going to that group and having some birth mothers there to kind of bounce some things off of and give you a little bit of clarity.
And you know, the situation goes both ways with birth moms. Some of them have been trying to find their children and they've received the same cold shoulder where letters go unanswered, phone calls go unanswered, birth mother day goes unrecognized. So it does go both ways. And I think seeing their pain made me realize there's so much to this conversation, which is what's so wonderful about this podcast and all of the adoptee connections online is to be able to have this conversation and support one another. And those people that are not touched by adoption, if they listen to our stories, they gain more understanding about the struggles that we face with our identity and our belonging.
Yeah, that's why I love your book too. It's not just an adoptee book. I mean, there are some adoptee, you know, obviously lots of little stories about being an adoptee in there, but by having it kind of be a universal book and not just an adoptee book, it gets out into the world and educates the world. And those little bits that they're reading about in there, you know, maybe a little light bulb will go off. You know, we kind of stay in our little adoptee bubble when we hear of an adoptee book and it doesn't get out to the general public. So that's what I love about your book is that it is getting out to the general public and we're educating people that way. I think that's great. And kind of leading into that, your book talks about identity and belonging and obviously everybody wants to feel that, but why do you think especially adoptees need to have that belonging feeling?
I think it's such a touch point with us. We know for some reason we weren't allowed to belong to our first family. And so we're always struggling to fit in. It's not just fitting in at the lunch table. It's fitting in within the family that we're adopted into. In my case, I have this strong sense of belonging to my twin sister, which was really, really helpful growing up. But not everyone has that luxury to have a full sibling that they're adopted with. But I think we're always searching for belonging. I mean, think about it. I just recently lost my husband a couple of years ago, and it's a whole new thing about belonging. Who am I without him? Who am I as a single person, not part of a couple? I just think belonging is a universal issue that all of us face, whether we're adopted, if we're a migrant or some kind of immigrant coming into society. Belonging is universal to everybody.
Yeah. What common myth do you think that society believes about adoption that isn't true?
That it's an alternative to abortion. I mean, that's kind of where we are right now in politics. It's adoption is seen as the alternative to abortion, and it's not. It's not. And there's plenty of cultures that assimilate family members within their own family, and it has nothing to do with abortion or adoption. It's just our definition of family and extending the family that that is troublesome.
Yeah. You talked about the right to privacy versus the right to know a little bit earlier relating to adoption. What are your thoughts on that subject?
Well, as an adoptee, I'm always going to come out on, we have absolutely every right to know everything that concerns us. There should be no gatekeepers when it comes to that. Of course, that's being very idealistic. Because as children, we didn't have any rights that we could exercise. So the adults in the room were the ones that decided for us. Unfortunately, as adults, we should have some say so, and we're all fighting to get those rights back.
Yeah, it still is so mind blowing to me too. What are your feelings? You kind of touched on this too. Open adoption compared to closed adoption. What's your feelings on that?
I think my preference, and I do like this about other cultures, is if a child can be adopted and stay within the family, that's the first order of preference.
Yeah.
I don't think open adoption is a panacea to the whole problem, but it's certainly better. I think growing up with some information about yourself, about your family, a reason why you were not being raised by your first family, I think that would be tremendously beneficial to a child's psyche.
Yeah, I do too. What do you think about search and reunions, and why do you think they aren't for everyone?
I think everybody's situation is different in the sense you don't know what you're going to find. And sometimes what you find is worse or better than you imagined. Being prepared for that, having some counseling or support group to know what you're walking into, I think is a very good idea. And to read some of these books that that I read, like Ann Fessler's book, The Girls That Went Away.
Mm-hmm.
I listened to Gretchen Sisson the other night talk about her new book, Relinquished. And it's really the research that she's doing 10 years apart, interviewing the same birth mothers, is follow-up work to Ann Fessler's book, The Girls That Went Away. And I think that should be required reading for any adoptee as they go down this path, just so they know what the history is and what they might be getting into.
Yeah. When you searched, did you think about where these people were going to fit into your life and your family, and like what your kids were going to call your biological mom and all that stuff?
I knew I wasn't going to call her mom. I knew I was going to call her by her first name. That was easy. I think I had sort of a rosy picture about how this all was going to turn out. And so I had to do a lot of stepping back in my own expectations about the reunion, mostly because my birth mom was particular. I think I have an essay in my book, Longing Matters, called Birth Mothers Should Come With Warning Labels.
Yes.
And they should. They should. Yeah, she was definitely more of a character than I thought that she'd be. My adoptive mom is a very loving, warm, sensitive person. So that was my mother figure growing up, and I expected her to be more like that, and she was not. She was very protective of her space. So we've gotten used to each other over time.
Yeah. What has helped you find some forgiveness and healing on both sides, adoptive parents and bio parents?
Well, the support group would be the number one thing. Writing, for sure. Anybody that is going through any kind of traumatic situation in their life should write it out, whether it's in a journal, that you don't show to anybody else, or maybe you do share to someone that you trust. I think writing helps us figure out what we think about something. And it's amazing when you put that pen to paper or your fingers to the keyboard, what comes out. I'm always astounded and like, wow, I hadn't ever thought about it that way. Where did that come from? So I think writing to heal is an excellent resource for people when they're dealing with something that's causing them a lot of concern.
What's been the most heartwarming outcome from you writing your books?
When I started writing my book, I did so because people were saying, this is such an incredible story, the way it turns out and all the things you had to go through and the journey with your sister. I thought, okay, you know, I think that would be fun to write a book about that. What I didn't know, and I was beginning to know once the book was finished, was that, you know, my story is my story and it's a little bit different than most people's, but it's also every adoptee's story. And it's got perspectives from birth moms and adoptive parents in it. It has appealed to such a varied audience that I'm always touched by people's reaction to it. And it's become bigger than I would have thought. I just think it appeals to people's curiosity if they're not touched by adoption. Adoptees react to it and say, yes, I felt that too. I went through that. So they feel affirmed. And I think it allows adoptive parents to look inside the head of an adult adoptee who's able to verbalize what they're thinking and feeling and saying, wow, I need to pay more attention to my child. I need to ask questions instead of assuming.
Yeah.
I think anybody that writes a book doesn't realize how it affects their readers. I have grown certainly tremendously from having written it, but also continuing to talk about it. I am speaking to a book club tonight, and it always amazes me the different people in the room. You always get adoptees and adoptive parents. If there's a birth mom, they almost never speak up because they don't necessarily want to share that with their peer group. But there's also a little controversy sometimes, because I've had people say to me, don't you think you were a little tough on your adoptive mom? I said, yeah, I was tough on her because she was tough on me, and I'm being honest. The memoir is about being honest. One of the most startling things that happened, somebody said to me, a friend who I now regard in a little different manner, she said, do you think you should be doing this? Do you think you should be researching your adoption like this? Don't you feel like you've let your parents down.
Wow.
That loyalty factor is something that every adoptee faces in dealing with whether they're going to search or not.
Yes.
But to have people confront you with this judgment that you're being disloyal to your parents by finding out basic facts of yourself, I think that's astounding, that yeah. perspective.
We're supposed to be grateful.
Well, we're grateful we're alive, but we're not grateful for the circumstances that we were put in without our consent and knowledge.
Yeah, it's amazing how ingrained in the society all these myths are, and how they really, like you just said, they really stand up for, you know, the adoptive parents, and they, I don't know, I think a lot of people just want to stay ignorant in the, they don't want to know the truth.
Yeah. And I think the other
obligation, do something about it.
Yeah. And I think the other obligation that we have as adoptees is to, when we tell our story and we give our viewpoints, not to come across as angry and whiny and complaining, but to come across as truthful and honest and reasonable in order for us to be believed and taken seriously, because the narrative is so controlled
yes.
by the adoptive parents and the legal system. And we, to make sense to people, we really have to be reasonable in the way we approach the conversation.
Yeah, that's a good point, because I'm always trying to figure that out. Like, what's the outcome that I want to have, and how can I make people be receptive to that? So that's good. Yeah. I haven't thought about it that way before. So kind of in closing, what would you want struggling adoptees to know?
It's not going to be easy. You're going to have to dig deep within yourself. You're going to have to ask for help. You're going to have to get involved and get support every step of the way. Get support, or it'll eat you alive.
Yeah. So tell us about your books and anything else that's coming up for you and the offerings. Let the listeners know where we can find you.
Okay. Well, I have a website, JulieMcGhughAuthor.com. I've been writing essays and blogs for probably 6 years now. Some of those essays are the ones that went into the new book that just came out in November, Belonging Matters. And my story about the adoption search and reunion is in my first book, Twice a Daughter. I have a third book coming out in February of 25. And it's the prequel to Twice a Daughter. So all the messy growing up in a big Irish Catholic family with blended family is the guts of that book. And it's been really fun to write. It's not just about adoption. I lost a sister when I was a teenager. It's about loss and love and this tremendous sisterhood that I share with my twin sister.
Well, I have really enjoyed our conversation today. All those links to your books and things will be in the show notes if anyone wants to get in touch with you or find your books. But I've really enjoyed talking to you today, Julie. Thank you for
coming on. Thanks, Melissa. Thanks. Good questions. I appreciate the conversation.
Thank you. It was great talking to Julie today, and her latest book, Belonging Matters, Conversations on Adoption, Family, and Kinship, is really a great read. And if you are busy, if you're a busy mom, this book is great because it has these little bite-sized small chapters. So if you only have 5 minutes to spare, you can read a couple quick chapters. If you're sitting in your car waiting for your child to come out of daycare or school, you can fit a chapter in. So very easy to read. So I highly recommend it. Also, each little story has its own little takeaways, which I love that about her book. So all the links to all her things are in the show notes if you're interested in getting in touch with Julie or getting her book. And that's it for today. So as always, take what you need and leave what you don't. And always remember to mind your own karma. I'll see you next time.